I know Joe Morris. I've known Joe Morris for a long time. I am no Joe Morris. But I am Joe Bast. I'm the president of the Heartland Institute. Before I was known as Mr. Anti-Global Warming, I was known as Mr. School Choice or School Reform. Hoover Institution published a book in 2004 that I co-authored with Herb Wahlberg titled Education and Capitalism, which covered a lot of ground that the panel is going to be covering today. I'd like to mention just a couple of things by way of kind of transitioning to this panel. Thor Helverson, in his comments during Q&A in the last panel before lunch, mentioned Stanley Fish, who is kind of notorious, I think, especially among people in this room. But his most recent book is Save the World on Your Own Time. Save the World on Your Own Time. It's an excellent book, and it's a great call on academics and faculty to get back to teaching and stop politicizing the curriculum and treating students as recruits into social and political movements. So I recommend Stanley Fish, Save the World on Your Own Time. Jane Shaw was talking about global warming, and I want to mention that there is a congressional hearing taking place next week on the use of fraudulent claims in the global warming debate. Now, unfortunately, because the Democrats are in control of Congress, the purpose of this hearing is to attack conservative groups and skeptics and business groups that are involved in the global warming debate. The good news is Chris Horner, who is with CEI, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, has been invited to testify, and he's going to try to turn the tables and report examples of where the left has used fraudulent data and illegal tactics, if you will, in order to advance their case. So those of you who follow the global warming debate will want to pay attention to that hearing next week. And if you have evidence or examples of the left using fraudulent tactics, send them over to Chris Horner at CEI so that he can use them as part of his testimony. All right. Last night, we heard a terrific speech by a very distinguished and eloquent keynote speaker, not Ed Foelner, Richard Gunderson, and he warned us repeatedly, and I think some of us thought unnecessarily, about the limits of economics as a way of understanding how the world works and capitalism as the only source of value or the only way to organize exchange. I think both of those points are taken, but no one here on this panel, on the economics of education, believes that economics is or should be a replacement for ethics or philosophy or radiology or any other subject. It's only the study of exchange in the presence of scarcity. It does not add much to our understanding of men's relationship with God or how to raise their kids or ethical ideals such as honor and courage and loyalty. Similarly, what we call capitalism is a combination of institutions and markets and individual rights that harness self-interest to create wealth. No one argues that markets can replace families or churches or other institutions of civil society. Capitalism does have an ethical content, which I think is what Professor Gunderman was getting at, but that ethical content has nothing to do with greed, a word that he used over and over again in his presentation. Greed is not self-interest, and greed has nothing to do, frankly, with capitalism. It precedes capitalism. It exists independent of whatever kind of economic institutions you have. Some of you will remember Max Weber's famous line. He says, "It should be taught in the kindergarten of cultural history that this naive idea of capitalism, capitalism as greed, must be given up once and for all." So our keynote speaker last night, I think, missed that kindergarten class on just what capitalism is and what economics is, and helps justify the presence of a few economists on the program today. Economists have been talking about education for a long, long time. In the 17th century, Sir William Petty was talking about education and training of workers as a way of estimating the cost, estimating the total wealth of England, and then the cost of lost lives in warfare. In the 18th century, Adam Smith was criticizing public and higher education using arguments that are very similar to the arguments that you're going to hear the panelists today making. In the 1970s, or 1960s and 70s, Gary Becker, Jacob Mintzer, Theodore Schultz, and others produced seminal research on the concept of human capital. And since then, there's been what Rick Hanushek calls a torrent of recent research on the economics of education. Just over 2 months ago now, on August 18th, Rose Director Friedman passed away. I think her passing reminds us of the huge contribution that Milton and Rose Friedman made to our understanding of education and how schools ought to be funded. In an essay titled The Role of Government in Education, first published in 1955 and then reprinted as a chapter in Capitalism and Freedom in 1992, Milton and Rose Friedman set out a profound challenge to the status quo of government funding of K-12 schooling, calling it an indiscriminate extension of government responsibility. They wrote, "Government has appropriately financed general education for citizenship, but in the process, it has been led also to administer most of the schools that provide such education. Yet, as we have seen, the administration of schools is neither required by the financing of education nor justifiable in its own right in a predominantly free enterprise society." Other economists have also made major contributions to the debate over school reform. Carolyn Hoxby at Harvard University determined that American school productivity fell by between 55 and 73%, depending on the skill and the age cohort tested, between 1970 and 1998. According to Hoxby, if schools today were just as productive as they were in 1970, the average 17-year-old would have a score that fewer than 5% of 17-year-olds today currently have. Hoxby also tested the theory that the more centralized education funding is, the less accountable schools become to parents and local taxpayers, and the lower scholastic achievement should become. She found that student achievement falls as the share of state funding of schools increases. Other economists have similarly made great contributions to it. So we are blessed today to have with us two economists and a fading lawyer, to comment on the economics of education. I'm going to quickly describe who they are right now so that we don't have to chop up the presentations. I'm going to give you their brief bios in the order in which they'll speak. Our first speaker is Richard Vedder. He's the Edwin and Ruth Kennedy Distinguished Professor of Economics at Ohio University, author of many books, including Going Broke by Degree, Why College Costs Too Much, published by American Enterprise Institute Press in 2004. This is the only book, I believe, that you can buy that compares higher education to slavery in the South. And I think higher education comes out worse than slavery. But it is a terrific book. The second speaker is George Leaf, the aforementioned fading lawyer. George is the Vice President for Research of the John W. Pope Center for Higher Education Policy. He's the book review editor for The Freeman and the editor of Educating Teachers, The Best Minds Speak Out, which was published by the American Council of Trustees and Alumni in 2002. Being paid to read books and write reviews is the dream job of every person in this room. Envy is a sin, so please don't take out your envy on George when he's speaking, but feel free to hoot and holler, just keep it polite. And the third and final speaker is Dwight Lee. Dwight is the William J. O'Neill Professor of Global Markets and Freedom at Southern Methodist University. Most of us know him, though, as the Ramsey Professor of Economics and Private Enterprise at the University of Georgia, which is what he did from 1985 to 2008. He is the author of several books, including a recent one with Richard McKenzie, titled Getting Rich in America, Eight Simple Rules for Building a Fortune and a Satisfying Life, published by Harper Business in 1999. Obviously, I have not read that book, otherwise I wouldn't be with you today. But I'm interested in how it compares to Richard Gunderman's book, We Make a Life by What We Give. I suspect that they take slightly different perspectives on how to live an enjoyable life, and somebody ought to write a review comparing those two books. I think it would be a good idea. Please welcome Richard Vedder.